Let's talk first of Jay-Z's Roc Nation. And I will say this to kind of be straight up. I work for Live Nation, which actually owns part of Roc Nation. That's my other job. And so Jay-Z's Roc Nation and the NFL announced Tuesday that they entered into a multi-year partnership to enhance the NFL's live game experiences and to amplify the league's social justice efforts. Now, Jay-Z and Meek Mill put together a fund to help with social injustice. You know, obviously Roc Nation is an entertainment company and they're going to advise the NFL on performances such as the Super Bowl, but this is a lot more than that. What prompted this at this time?
This time specifically, I don't know. I mean, it's obviously generally this time in that the NFL realizes it has to get with it in a lot of ways. And I think the pressure, first of all, from Colin Kaepernick, but also from the fallout from all the players that have continued to apply the pressure from Colin Kaepernick has really pushed the league in terms of, first of all, funding a lot of causes that it would have been involved with, let's be real. And also getting involved with a company like this that is going to, first of all, again, push it down the alley of contributing to social justice and all the things that Colin Kaepernick took that knee for. And that some players continue to take the knee for, or sit for, or not come out of the locker room for. And then a nice little, I guess, advantage is that when you throw in things like the halftime show, which the consultation is also just probably, again, to remind these guys what they might be completely blind and deaf to. But also, maybe this could make the NFL just a little bit more hip, or actually give them a little bit of hipness to begin with if they have zero. And so it doesn't hurt that on the side as well. It could be a great partnership in terms of branding, in addition to just being a partnership in terms of doing something right and sending a good message and being more proactive on something that the players have been very, very vocal about.
Brad, Joey already mentioned the name Andrew Luck, and it went from an ankle injury to now a high ankle sprain. And now week one potentially could be in jeopardy for the Colts quarterback. I don't think it's that big of a deal because it's not his shoulder. That was the one injury that took him out for the better part of 2 years. Is this really a concern? Is these just the bumps and bruises of NFL quarterbacks? How concerned should the Colts be, a team that a lot of people are picking as a dark horse Super Bowl team?
Yeah, if it was the shoulder, I'd be terrified. I think we all would. But there's two other aspects to this. First of all, you can just be injury prone, right? And that's a concern in itself. Hmm. So if Andrew Luck just seems to be prone to injury and maybe isn't the fastest healer, and this is something that apparently has lingered for much of the offseason, which just feels eerily reminiscent to the shoulder situation, that's concerning in itself. The second thing is, I don't know if I trust the Colts very much. I mean, the fact that this is kind of transform from, again, as you mentioned, an ankle to a calf to a high ankle. And then Jim Irsay said something about a bone. And well, we were thinking, okay, that's not a bone. We've been told a calf. A calf isn't a bone. Maybe Jim Irsay has to get his anatomy down. But I don't know if we trust them. They misled us for like a year over the shoulder. And it's entirely possible that this is worse than they've let on. You'd think they wouldn't make the same mistake twice, but until we see him on the field, I won't feel totally comfortable with the situation just based on what we've been through with him.
Well, Jim Irsay's track record is, shall we say, less than stellar, somewhat dubious. But the guy that's got to be pissed is the general manager, Chris Ballard, who had to get on a conference call and now explain this mysterious bone that none of us had ever heard of. And then, and then all of a sudden, Andrew Luck has a high ankle-ish sprain. I don't know if it was high-ish ankle. No, it was a high-ish ankle sprain.
You think maybe a mid ankle sprain, but
yeah, but a high-ish. It's a high-ish one. It's a high-ish ankle.
They're not
sprain.
Comfortable with mid. They have to go to high because no one's ever said mid ankle sprain anyway. But I mean, that would be what I'd conclude. The point that again, the murkiness is the concern. We just don't know, and obviously Andrew Luck has an idea. The team doctors have hopefully an idea as to, you know, how he feels and how his timeline might look. But the fact is, we're now only 3 weeks out. And, you know, as you mentioned, George, the Colts are a team that a lot of people think could finally slay the Patriots this year. Like if all the stars were to align, and immediately before the season's even started, the first star is not lining up.
Brad, a lot of people, Antonio Brown's made a ton of news, be it wearing wet socks into a cryogenic chamber in Russia, which probably isn't a good idea to begin with. But he has that, and now he's looking for a helmet, and he's already missed a lot of training camp. I know all the nonsense surrounding Antonio Brown and how he wants to make it about him, but is there one thing we're not talking enough about? He's missed a ton of training camp. How is he building that chemistry with Derek Carr? Because he could do all these shenanigans with the Steelers because him and Ben were on the same page, at least on the football field. How is this going to look if Derek Carr is missing some throws and he's not connecting with them? How is that going to look on the football field when the chemistry just isn't there because they haven't had the time together?
Yeah, that's a great point. This is almost such a distraction that it's distracting us from the fact that there are legitimate concerns about, potentially concerns anyway, about Antonio Brown on the field and the Raiders on the field and establishing chemistry and the fact that Antonio Brown, who now is on the wrong side of 30, has showed a pretty significant statistical decline in 2018. Maybe that was related to some of the off-field distractions, but that wouldn't make you feel any better about the fact that 2019 has been filled thus far with off-field distractions. So the fact that he hasn't had a chance to get many reps in with Derek Carr this offseason, hasn't had any real live reps against opposing defenses with a, ironically, with a helmet on this offseason, leads you to wonder, this is a team that, again, it's kind of similar to the Colts in a way in that the stars had to align for them to just be decent this season. They needed Antonio Brown to be at his absolute best. They need Derek Carr to bounce back and finally have the season he had a few years ago. They need Tyrell Williams to step up opposite Brown so there's not total pressure on Brown in terms of defenses focusing in. They need all those things to come together. Josh Jacobs, the rookie running back, has to have a good season. And yet, again, one of those things right off the bat isn't there, which just it causes you to have a lot of trouble being confident in the team.
When you look at the Antonio Brown situation and the amount of attention that he wants or seems to want or seems to get, and I don't know if it's because he makes for good fodder or if it's because it's the kind of guy he is, whether it's showing up a training camp and a hot air balloon, which is kind of apropos, and the flashy cars, the smile, the charisma. We know what he is on the field. He's a great receiver. But as we've just discussed, not having reps when you have, and he did work out with Carr one-on-one, but that's gotten very, very little impact on what's going to happen on a football field. This guy has the propensity to do the look at me. You've got a guy in John Gruden who seems to be embracing him and saying all the right things. We support Antonio. I mean, I don't really know what else he can say. This guy, Antonio Brown's got his way, right? Yeah, they traded for him, but I'm saying he got his way financially. He's kind of getting his way with the helmet. I can see the wheels falling off on this real quickly by week three, when the Raider offensive line can't protect Carr, Brown's not getting the ball like he wants to, Gruden pulls a Gruden because he's got 8 years left on his contract, 9 years left on his contract, and when they move to Vegas, he's the marquee. Do you see this unraveling, or do you think that Antonio? I don't see Antonio Brown having a career year. I just don't.
Yeah, no, I see it unraveling. I saw it unraveling before any of this happened. I mean, I don't think that it required me being any sort of expert either. I think that was back in March. A lot of people were concerned about this fit from the beginning, just because Antonio Brown had shown so many signs that he, first of all, again, on the field was potentially starting to decline, and off the field is problematic. And so, yeah, I mean, I always worried about the dynamics between Brown and John Gruden and Derek Carr. He's a great guy, but regardless, Derek Carr wants to be obviously the man. He should be the man. He's the quarterback. He should be the leader of that team. He's the guy who's returning. And to have Brown kind of come in and take over like this could be problematic, especially when you have Gruden's ego there as well. So I was already concerned. I'm more concerned now. I just think it's, again, you mentioned the $100 million contract, 8 years remaining. Antonio Brown, 50.2 million contract for 3 years. He can't really be released for at least two more years. He'd cost them so much money. And so they're sort of married to this now. And it either ends with the Brown thing blowing up before they even go to Vegas, before they relocate, which is just a disaster, or with them playing out the string this way with a guy who's not living up to his contract, who's continuing to cause a scene off the field. I just don't think this is the end of it. Like, I don't know if you guys are, I don't get the feeling this is the final episode with him off the field. It just seems to be a continuous string at this point. Like, it feels like self-sabotage. It feels like there's something not right with the guy. I alluded on Twitter to how I felt about Charlie Sheen when I was watching him unwind back in 2011.
Hey, I had a front row seat for that, pal. I was right there.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I did the Charlie Sheen tour. I emceed five of the shows. You want to hear some stories? I can't tell you any of them on the air, okay?
Really? You did five of those shows?
Yeah, I emceed five of the shows. I played Radio City Music Hall with Charlie Sheen, so I can relate when you say...
Oh, you emceed them.
Yes, I emceed them after the wheels fell off opening night in Detroit. I jumped up on stage and emceed a bunch of the shows, and then I had to get out of there.
Exactly. So you know what I'm getting at more than anything. I mean, you had this feeling when that was happening that it was like, it was funny. It was late night TV fodder. And then it was also like unsettling. It was just like, is there something wrong with this guy? And I seriously wonder if there's something wrong with Antonio Brown. It concerns me a bit to watch his antics and the way he's behaved. And the fact that he didn't really behave that way for much of the first decade of his career. He wasn't, you know, he was still a prima donna receiver and he caused the odd issue, but things have really gotten out of hand in the last, you know, 6 to 8 months, and it concerns me a bit. So obviously beyond that, I'm terrified for the Raiders.
Brad, is Antonio Brown, and I think he has been the best receiver in the National Football League the last few seasons, but the price the Raiders paid to acquire him was just a third and a fifth. Does that make him easier to cut just based on they didn't have to give up a lot to get him?
Yeah, aside from the financial aspect, if you're willing to just look at that as a sunk cost, which it is, and move on. But obviously cutting them now would cost $30.2 million. Cutting them even next year would cost them – that's just in dead cap. It would cost them another $15.2 million. So financially, the thing they gave up a lot here was the money, of course. The return on the trade was borderline comical for a guy who's a seven-time Pro Bowler pretty much in his prime. But the financial aspect, that would make it real hard to swallow. It's the PR hit they would take is, I think, what would scare the Raiders as much as anything. Because I think that this move, along with the Gruden move, along with keeping Derek Carr, along with even considering Kyler Murray and Dwayne Haskins, you know, in terms of the rumors we heard leading into the draft, I think a lot of that has had to do with the fact that this franchise is trying to redeem itself before it heads to Vegas and have a new image when it arrives there. And to have this blow up, or to have the Gruden situation blow up before they even get there, before they make that move, would be, you know, a big problem for the organization.
Yeah, I can't imagine that this is going to turn out any way other than poorly for the Raiders. They're one of those teams so far in the Gruden era where they've done nothing but make mistakes. You lose Khalil Mack, you lose Amari Cooper. Huh? It's not... Neither player was past their prime or anywhere near past their prime. And Amari Cooper goes to Dallas, and he's now part of a team that some people are calling to make the Super Bowl. And depending on what happens with Zeke, but you got to figure, you know, that's one last thing I want to get to here. Where are we at with Zeke Elliott showing up to training camp? Is this just going to be one of those scenarios where Jerry Jones capitulates and overrides Stephen Jones' desire to have some fiscal responsibility and signs him because he doesn't want to see a repeat of the Emmitt Smith 1993, where Smith didn't, you know, the Cowboys got off to an 0-2 start, I think it was, or 0-3, and then they backed up the truck for Smith at that time?
Yeah, I think it totally depends on how they start the season. I think that it's going to really be dependent on if they're continually competitive and they're in first place, and they're looking like that Super Bowl team without him, then I think they keep rolling the dice. If they, you know, they lose against the division rival, the Giants, in week one, you know, they play the Redskins in week two, all of a sudden you're 0-2, or you start 1-3, they play the Saints in week four, the Packers in week five. You know, that's not easy. And so if you're not winning those games, even if Zeke's not the reason why you're not winning those games, that's what everybody's going to say. And so that, I think, is what will, you know, put enough pressure on Jerry Jones to cave. I don't know if they could start strong anyway. I wouldn't be surprised if they still beat the Giants and the Redskins and the Dolphins, start 3-0 without them. Maybe they split against the Saints and Packers, and you're a 4-1 team headed into a game with the Jets. So, I mean, they could be in decent shape regardless. And I am on team running backs hardly matter, and so even when they're great ones. And so I just don't know if it's going to be worth it for Jones, and I think he's probably going to be a lot more stubborn now than he was in a very different era in terms of running back impact when Emmitt Smith went through this 20-odd years ago.
Should we stop being surprised by quarterbacks who potentially think they can make a lot more money than what they're offered? When we're hearing that Dak Prescott turns down $30 million a year, the NFL quarterback's a different animal in that league. They can make as much money as they can humanly possible, but how can the Cowboys keep everybody together? And that's a roster that has so much talent on it on both sides of the football. Can they pay Dak more than $30 million? And if I think of Dak Prescott, Brad, I don't even think he's in the top 15 quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah, I mean, I think teams are going to start to consider these deals at some point and consider if they're doing more harm than good. No one wants to give up a franchise quarterback. That's the huge fear. But, you know, the fact is that, you know, we just saw Russell Wilson get all that money. The Seahawks were at their best. They were a Super Bowl champion when he was still in a rookie contract.
Right.
The Patriots, all that success they've had the last 20 years nearly now, Tom Brady's like a mid-level, if not low-paid quarterback, willingly. He sacrifices for that reason. And as a result, they're able to focus on the rest of the roster a lot more. When the Eagles, you know, Carson Wentz, Nick Foles, when they had all their success, those guys were making no money when they won the Super Bowl that year. Joe Flacco was making nothing. They won the Super Bowl. He becomes the highest-paid quarterback in NFL history. They haven't been competitive since. And so you look at some of these scenarios and you think, look, Aaron Rodgers, look at that one too. Like, look at the lack of success they've had ever since he became so high paid because they haven't been able to maintain the team around him that they had before. And so I think teams are going to start wondering if, man, these quarterbacks are having so much success right out of the gate. Maybe we got to start trying to cycle rookies, just draft a new one every couple of years. And you know, 50% of them work out, 50 don't. But if you're doing that every couple of years, every 4 or 5 years, you have a new great quarterback. I think we're a ways away from that still. And obviously, you know, the power that they have at the bargaining table is still at its absolute peak right now as the salary cap rises by 10% a year. But I do wonder if teams are going to start looking at these examples around the league, especially if Seattle doesn't get in again this year and or doesn't, you know, make a Super Bowl run again this year, and the Patriots have success with Brady's situation, and think, you know, maybe we're better off. You know, that just this past year, you know, look at the highest paid quarterbacks in the league. It was Rodgers, it was Matt Ryan, it was Kirk Cousins, it was Jimmy Garoppolo, it was Matthew Stafford, and it was Derek Carr. Those guys all have something in common. None of their teams made the playoffs.